Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 304 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her face, but not quite the way you think about it. Yeah, this is going to be a fantastic episode. Just know that before we begin, it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Here's your first reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. It's really important we hear from you because we love, love, love your feedback. And this show is a very special one, and I will love to be able to know your thoughts. So make sure to hit iTunes afterwards. I'll give you another little reminder later on too as well. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life.
It's all about Her.
So I had read about a book that was coming out that to me just absolutely captivated me. It's called Face, a Memoir. Now, as most of you know, I'm a physician and a scientist, and I've spent lots and lots of time studying stress and trauma. And this is one of the main reasons why I was so interested in what this book was all about. The author is Marcia Meyer. Marcia holds a bachelor's degree in journalism and an MFA in creative writing and has taught writing workshops in numerous college and university courses. She is a member of the Authors Guild and Association of Writers and Writing Programs. Why am I saying all this? She's a hell of a damn good writer. That's why. But what was most important, other than the fact that she's written so many other books and has a fantastic podcast herself on girl talk, women, aging, and sexuality, is that she wrote this book about her face and what happened to it and how this took her on a journey that was lifelong and how we can all learn so much from this journey. Marcia, welcome to the Her podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Peek. I'm just delighted to be here.
Marcia, why did you write this book, Face, a Memoir?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the primary reason was to understand what had happened to me. And when I was a child, I was 5 years old, I was hit by a car and dragged 200 feet under the car down the road, and I lost my entire left cheek and my eyelid and was nearly killed. And that was the beginning of what turned out to be 15 years of surgeries. I had 20 surgeries over that period of time from the time I was 5 until I was 20. And when I went off to college after my final surgery, I stuffed all that pain and trauma and hurt down as deep as I could stuff it and went on with my life. And I loved college. I made friends for the first time in my life. And well, not the first time, but you know, I really, for the first time, opened up to friendships and went on to become a pretty successful journalist and had a almost 20 year journalism career. And got married and adopted a daughter. But when I turned 50, my life was just starting to fall apart. My marriage was falling apart. My business was falling apart. Everything was going to hell in a handbasket, and I didn't understand why. And so I actually went to therapy with my ex-husband for marriage counseling. And after about 6 months, nothing had changed, and I got frustrated and said, this isn't doing any good. So we stopped, but then I realized I still needed to keep talking. So I went back to the therapist and I said, I need to keep, I need to, you know, I'm still working on stuff. And he said something to me which I write about in the book, that has just resonated with me. He said, well, tell me about your scars. And I had never thought about my, he said, what do you think about you? You know, I had not thought about my scars in such a long time. And I fortunately not had anybody ask me about my face in many, many years. It happened a lot when I was a child and as a young adult, but after I, as I grew older, people stopped asking, which was a blessing, and maybe a curse too. But anyway, so that began an 7 or 8 year journey of therapy for me to go back in time and understand what had happened to me and confront the trauma, the sadness, the pain, all of the things that I had stuffed so far down that I didn't even, I couldn't feel them anymore. So that was the beginning. And then when I, after I had my husband and I divorced, I realized I had to write about it. So I started to write this book. It took me 15 years.
What's the connection between the trauma that you went through, which I know can resonate with so many people out there, and when things were, and I quote, falling apart in your life?
Well, that was part of the, that was part of the journey, is understanding that things like fear of intimacy and self-esteem issues and inability to set boundaries and thinking always that I could fix things, that I could control things. All of those things all added up to me making some really bad decisions as a young, you know, as a 48-year-old, 49-year-old, 50-year-old woman, and realizing I had, as much as I loved my husband, I had chosen him for the wrong reason. The reason I chose him was because I thought no one else would ever be in my life. And he was the only one who had ever shown any interest in me. And so I thought, I have to marry this guy. It turns out that it wasn't the best decision. I bought a business, a writer's conference in Santa Barbara, thinking I could just magically make it be this incredibly successful thing. And I didn't know the first thing about what I was doing. And I ended up losing lots and lots of money, which led to us, you know, losing our home and just, you know, all of those things, all I can now tie back to fears about, you know, not being able to express, to say no, not being able to say no, even though, and just holding on so tightly to things, an attempt to control things, that it just all went awry.
Many times when people, you know, have undergone trauma, no matter what it is, one of the things that's very, very important to keep in mind is that when you had no control, I mean, in this case, you were a little girl and you were on your bicycle and you were hit by a car, which is a horrific and traumatic thing, let alone what it did to your face. When that happens, there's like a reactionary thing in your life where you really feel as though by being in greater control of whatever's around you, that you will somehow resurrect a level of control in your life that will somehow make up for what happened. And people who've been in complex trauma do this all the time. They become pretty tightly wound about things like that because, you know, they lost control and in many cases it damn near killed them. So they're not going to be there again. So maybe by over-controlling or by, in your case, it was also interesting. As a woman, this also was about appearance. Mm. So tell us, you know, when I look at your picture, quite frankly, in the, you know, on your website and whatever, you look beautiful. Kudos to the plastic surgeon who did that incredible work. What was it, Dr. Kozlov from your book?
Kislov. Dr. Kislov, Richard Kislov.
But talk to me about, you know, how over the years you dealt with the feeling of appearance and self-esteem.
Oh, wow. Well, I would say that, I mean, I even still today see my face in the morning every morning and see the scars. And thank you for saying that I look beautiful. I appreciate that a lot. And I know that I look vastly different than I did when I was a child. I had, for a good part of the early years, my face was very disfigured. And there was a time I remember my mother took me downtown with my brother one time to go shopping. I probably was like 7 or 8. And a woman came around one of the clothing racks with her two kids and saw me and grabbed them and say, "Don't look at that little girl," and pulled them away from me. So it was very raw. For a while, I had a very thick, stringy piece of skin that connected my upper and lower eyelids until my surgeon was able to create an eyelid for me. And he fashioned an entire upper lid for me and also transplanted the eyebrow lashes into my eye, my eyelid. So I have eyelashes. But I struggled because I went to school and kids teased me and I was shunned. I wasn't invited to play on the playground with anyone. So that kind of became my whole experience, was one of being reviled because of my face. And then when I grew older, you know, I had skin grafts all over my body, on my thighs and my tummy and my chest. And so when I got to be a young adult, an adolescent and into high school, I was very afraid to take off my clothes to go swimming in front of people, unless it was my family. And that led to feeling incredibly insecure when I got to be in my late teens and 20s and started to have sexual experiences. And that was really hard for me. So that, you know, those are the kinds of things that stay with you forever. And I have, you know, very sad memories of acting out when I was a little girl in Catholic school and being thrown in the cloakroom and sitting on the floor among the wet woolen galoshes and mittens and sitting in there crying by myself. So it was a hard time.
And what was your best support system during that time? And what did that support system do for you?
I would say my dad. My dad was, oh my gosh, he always, always just loved me and treated me just like I was the most wonderful, beautiful little child. And my mom, you know, the book is a lot about my relationship with my mom. It was very difficult and complex, and I didn't understand for a long time her own sense of guilt. She had lost two babies before I was born, one very tragically, actually both of them tragically. So then when I was hurt, and it happened out in front of our house, and my mom was on the phone at the time with my grandmother, I think it just devastated her. You know, she was probably racked with guilt. And also every single time she looked at me, she was reminded of the fact that, you know, this had happened to me. And so really my dad, and I wrote a piece for Thrive Global about how I worry about this pandemic affecting children, particularly children who have experienced complex or trauma. And the thing is, we need, as you asked about, a really strong support system to get through. Anyone who struggles with complex trauma, which is essentially trauma that is sustained over a long period of time. And if you have even one parent that provides that for you, you have a better chance of being able to come through it without any really serious long-term effects. And as I even mentioned in the piece, I still feel, you know, the effects of some of that, although I understand it better today. But yeah, my mom was not really available to me, but my dad certainly was. And he's probably the reason.
Yeah. And I bring this up because, you know, we've just recently had on probably one of the world's experts on complex trauma. It's actually the name of her textbook is Dr. Christine Courtois. And, you know, Chris was mentioning how one actually is able to unravel this in one's life. And that is by having trauma-based therapy. by really seeking out a therapist who gets it with trauma. And interestingly, that's been a fairly recent phenomenon if you're reaching out and trying to do something like this. I think it's just really remarkable, and people need to be aware of the fact that I would venture to say that the majority of people, even if it's just 51%, but the majority of people who've had some level of complex trauma, basically sweep it under the carpet. It's too much. It's overwhelming. You don't even know where to begin. Half the time you can't find a therapist who really understands trauma anyway. And, you know, when I read your book, which was just fabulous, and I highly recommend that everyone grab this book to really get a sense of what this is all about in one individual's life, because you're a very talented writer, and I really like what you've done in terms of explaining what this meant in your own life. I just think that people at some point sweep it under the rug until finally you have a mountain under the rug and you trip over it, and that's what happened when you were 50. You know, suddenly it just sort of rears up. And then it seems like it's mysterious. It's like, wait a minute, why is all this happening to me? It happens to you because you've been laying down the foundation for this for quite some time. You know, you picked the guy for reasons that probably go way back to, you know, what you actually deserve. In the back of your mind, you're saying, geez, you know, I mean, anybody like me, I mean, I'm going to grab him because it's probably all I'm ever going to get. Exactly. And let alone other things, maybe if I, you know, succeed in X, then people will see me. And this is a conference thing you were mentioning, you know, then I'll be okay. I'll somehow be okay. And no, the whole issue of being okay is far more complex than that. Now, I noticed in the book you have a new partner. Are you still with the same person?
No, we split up a year ago, which was really sad, but it was also, it was my choice and it was a good idea. And I realized again that I had, you know, chosen someone for reasons that weren't the best for me. So, and you know, we're as with my ex-husband, we're still amicable friends, but it's, yeah, I just, you know, you think that you have found someone, and I'm discovering, I'm still in therapy, and I'm discovering too that it's all about self-love. So you choose someone who you think is going to fill a hole in you, and they can never do that for you. You've got to be the one.
I absolutely love what you're saying. I mean, because it's really straight out of your book, too. And that is that, you know, for all the women out there listening, you know, for the Her podcast, right? How many times have we just been trying to find somebody in our life who's going to fill some hole, you know, some gap, you know, for us, instead of us addressing that gap ourselves and really feeling as though we're worthy enough to realize we as women have a hell of a lot of options. We have options. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to, and I quote, settle. You know, what are you doing settling? Right. Now, in your life, and I brought this up for a reason, I really didn't know the answer to your question because I've never had the pleasure of talking to you other than reading your beautiful book. So what's interesting about this is that I gave it 50-50 odds that you were still in a learning process and that this person was either going to be or not still in your life. Okay. And so you just confirmed exactly what I said, which is, you know, the learning process is ongoing. You don't just sort of go, oh, I have an awakening and now everything's going to be fine. No, because you've been dragging this stuff around with you for decades. So who said you're going to just suddenly wake up and, you know, life is just going to go swimmingly all over again? Are you flipping kidding me? So what you are, Marcia, is you're real. You're absolutely real. I'd like to read an excerpt from the book that I found very compelling, if sure. You don't mind. Have I found myself? No, not completely, but I'm more aware of my whole self, my body, my face, and the roles they all play in my perception of who I am. What does it mean to find oneself? For me, it has meant pulling all my splintered pieces together and understanding how that splintering affected me. It feels like the end of a very long, difficult journey. But who can know what life will bring? Being aware means I can make different choices. Choices based on what's in front of me and not on what happened 5 decades ago. I can choose to follow my heart. Oh, I love that. And then, you know, you said, I can choose to see my face as a work of art, because in ways most people can't claim, it is. It's one of Dr. Kislov's sculptures, crafted with scalpel and sutures and surgical steel. I am not my face, and I am. Now, tell me what you were taught. What was going on in your mind when you wrote that?
Oh, my goodness. I was, as you saw in the book, I had a very complex relationship with my surgeon as well. And he had become a pretty well-known, at least regionally, sculptor later in his life. And I just thought it was such an interesting comparison. You know, he was sculpting with skin on me, and instead of clay or bronze, and that whole understanding of, you know, my face is what happened to my face, and my face today will always be there. Like that'll always be a part of me, and it will also be a deep emotional wound that will always be with me. And so coming to terms with being able to say, you know, I am not my face and I am my face. Being able to hold those two things at the same time, those two, you know, vastly different things, to be able to hold them in the same space and say, I'm, you know, just like I would say, yes, I'm a wounded child and I'm also a very, very successful and happy woman, right? So being able to hold those two disparate things together at the same time.
And, you know, you're very blessed because you had an outlet to be able to express what happened to you because you're a writer. I happen to be a writer too, so we're kind of brethren here. And, you know, it's so wonderful to be able to put, as it were, pen to paper. That's more of a metaphor these days, to say the least. Now, what was really interesting, and this happens in trauma therapy too, is that you revisited where this took place. And you wrote Home Again, which was sort of an epilogue in many respects. And that was in August of 2016. You drove past the house where you grew up and where it all happened, right out in front of the house. Okay, and so a lot of trauma therapists think that it's really important to kind of, as it were, put the trauma on the table. Okay, what happened? All right, don't be running away and don't be glossing it over. And let's just, you know, look at it kind of raw. Tell us, walk us through what it was like for you to go back there.
Well, it was emotional. And as I write in the book, my partner at the time, my daughter was with us in the car, and we stopped and looked at the house, and he said, you know, how do you feel about this? And I realized I didn't feel anything about that house other than just kind of fond childhood memories. And then I realized that the trauma that I experienced there, I had actually transplanted it to the church, to the Catholic Church, where I grew up and went to school, and where I had almost all of my most sorrowful experiences as a very young child. And so I gave the trauma to the church because I realized I couldn't give it to my home because that's where I lived. And I couldn't bear to live in a house that also bore the trauma that I was experiencing.
So when you say you gave it to the church, you know, I also went to Saint Everything where I grew up. So you're talking to another Catholic in recovery. Mm-hmm. So tell me what you meant by that. I'm not quite sure what you mean.
So
you gave it to the church.
I think I gave it to the church in that I assigned all of that deepest sadness and pain and hurt to the experiences I had in the school and at the church. Because I don't know, you know, about you, but when I went to Catholic school, we went to Mass 6 days a week. You know, it was Sunday, and then
oh, yes, we did. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I had nuns for, you know, for teachers and the whole thing. And so all of those really hard experiences as a child and going from, you know, first grade, second grade, third grade through sixth grade, I had to find a vessel to hold all that stuff. And so I actually put it in my experience of the church, of my experience of going to Catholic school and going to Mass every Sunday. And I write about how I still today can hardly step inside a vestibule without falling apart.
Wow.
It's just there. I've worked so hard to like separate it, but it's just, that's where, for whatever reason, my psyche decided to rest all of that sorrowful pain in that place.
Well, there's the other thing too. I remember when I was in Catholic school, you know, you have smaller classes and, you know, there's cliques and all of that. And you know, it as true in all schools, but, you know, we referred to our experiences in Catholic school, you know, it's important to look like everyone else. It's important to, when you whip on that uniform, immediately you look like everyone else, right? Because you got that uniform on. Mine was a gray skirt pleated with maroon sweater. Oh, yes. There you go. And then I had, of course, the white blouse with the tie, you know, that we had above. Mm-hmm. And we had all of that. And so, you know, we had to look the same. However, that being said, if you look different because you have scarring and you have other things going on, kids can be horrible. They can be, you know, very brutal and how they deal with you as being different. And I think you were in your chapter on going back home, if I remember correctly, you said that, oh, yeah, and there's so-and-so's house, the person who bullied me. And there was the bullying thing that went on. And bullying in and of itself is horrifically traumatic, even if it just happens to be for something else and you look perfectly fine and whatever, but you're bullied, you know, and there it is.
Yeah.
And so I think that, I mean?
Go ahead.
No.
There was a kid who lived next door to us who, he was a real brat and for whatever reason thought it was really fun to tease me and actually threw a pine cone at me one day, not long after I'd had a surgery, and tore open the sutures, and they had to take me back and do the surgery over again.
Oh dear God!
Yeah, I don't
talk
think I
about
even put
traumatic.
That in the book. Yeah.
Nah, yeah. I don't recall that being in the book.
Yeah, I don't think
so.
I wrote that.
You know, but you ended this thing with, you know, coming back quite well, and you know, this was you had come back because of your father's brother, your uncle, passing
uncle
away.
Died. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was this little saying you said at the end, all shall be well and all shall be well and all manner of thing shall be well.
Yeah.
Julian of Norwich. There you go.
Yeah.
And so did that become kind of, Did that become a bit of a mantra to you?
Oh, absolutely. And only since I started writing this book and started to delve into all of this stuff and discovered her. And it has been a constant mantra.
Yeah, I love it.
All these years. Yeah.
I love it. And it's just, it's beautiful. And I think that you also had a catharsis there, too, when you were there surrounded by your cousins and family and friends. And then, you know, you were there in the church, obviously, and you felt that familiar tightening.
And it's been wonderful because since then I have stayed in touch with a number of those cousins who I had not seen in probably 30 years. So that has been a lovely, like, familial reconnection for me over the last 4 years.
Interesting. Well, you said this one thing that really stuck with me here. Tears sting my eyes and I have to take a deep breath. I breathe out, breathe in again. Gulping for air, holding back the sobs that threaten to overcome me. But this time, as I struggle with the emotion, I begin to feel a sense of peace from deep inside. What was that about, Marcia?
Yeah, I think it was finally coming to terms with some of the trauma that I felt, and realizing that it wasn't the church, that understanding that I had misplaced that and I needed to find another place to confront that. And then being able to say that and realize that I had to find a different vessel. And so being able to, and it has been easier. I've not been to church much, honestly, since then, but it has made it easier for me to go into a Catholic church and to appreciate a lot of the spirituality that you can find in a faith-based institution.
I love it.
And I, you know, where I put that, I'm not sure. I think I'm still, you know, working through all that trauma. So
I think that this is so inspirational. Everyone out there, we've been talking to Marcia Meyer, and that's M-E-I-E-R. She is the author of Face, a memoir. And not only is she an extraordinarily talented writer, but oh boy, you're going to learn about one person's journey through a trauma that is obviously mind-body, starting with a physical trauma and clearly intertwining the mental for many decades. And, you know, this is really a, you know, lesson to self that it takes a while to work on this kind of thing, that there are no overnight cures here, that it's a dynamic process. It'll take many, many years for you to kind of really come to grips with what this trauma really did to your life. And the fact that you have much more control than you think you do, that once you become aware, and you said those were your very words, once I became aware, et cetera, okay, then you start this whole journey, and then it starts unfolding, and every day you take a breath again, and you say, okay, and you have good days, and you have funky days, and, you know, you keep moving it forward. But listening to what happened to you in the church that day really, you know, told me that you had really grown, and that you had evolved, and you're getting to a much, much better place, which I think is just fabulous. Before we close, I'd love for you to just say one thing, just one, you know, basically phrase of wisdom that you could share with people out there who might also have some level of trauma and are just becoming aware and are fear, you know, basically being led by fear in their life about, I don't really want to come to grips with this. This is too much. It's too much, overwhelming, et cetera. What would you say to someone like that?
Trust that you can get through it. Trust that if you find the right support systems, and I'm talking about therapy and whatever else might be helpful to you, that you can overcome. And also that it's going to take a while. it's not going to happen overnight, but if you trust in yourself and your inner guidance, that you can find peace.
Excellent. I just love it. And, you know, you're hearing this from someone who's still a work in progress. Guess what? So are you. We all are. And for this, Marcia, I thank you so much. Again, Marcia Meyer, who is the author of Face, a memoir. Please pick it up. This is a beautiful, beautiful book. I think you're going to learn a lot. Oh, thank you so much, Marcia. And everyone out there right now, take a minute to hit iTunes and rate and review the show. We're sitting here and we want to hear from you. This is so important. I want to hear your thoughts about what you just experienced by listening to Marcia Meyer talk about her own journey with trauma. I'm interested in this because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD or Instagram at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. Please stay safe and stay well.